well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with a friend, Kosei Ono, from Virgin Islands Safe Gun Owners. I do want to talk about the 34 proposed rules that the ATF and DOJ unveiled yesterday. Not all of them dealing with firearms, but the vast majority of them do, right? There's one proposed rule, I think, that deals with contraband cigarettes, another that deals with filing forms in triplicate for, I think it's importers of plastic explosives. I don't think we need to concern ourselves with those. But the repeal of the Biden-era pistol brace rule that treated basically every brace-equipped pistol as a short-barreled rifle. The repeal of the Biden-era engaged in the business rule that treated almost every gun owner who offered a firearm for sale, whether or not that sale was completed, as an unlicensed gun dealer. That's very important. There are rules that would, I think, really codify some just common sense things regarding the Firearms Owners Protection Act that, you know, yes, you stopping and staying overnight in a hotel, you stopping to get gas, maybe grabbing something to eat, going to the bathroom, all of that still counts as traveling under FOPA. It doesn't make you a criminal if you do these things while you've got a firearm in your vehicle. But we don't have the actual text of any of these proposed rules yet. That is coming. The proposed rules were signed yesterday. They need to be published in the Federal Register. Then a public comment period will open up. After that public comment period closes, ATF will go through all of the comments, and there's going to be a lot of them regarding, you know, the 34 different rules before releasing their final rule. The good news is that, you know, we're early enough in President Trump's second term that I suspect these rules will take effect before his term is up. And it's not going to be a particularly easy process to undo these things. It's not a particularly easy process to undo the rules that Biden put in place. But I want to wait until we see the actual text of these rules so we can go through them in detail. And then we'll be talking about this next week, probably with NRA ILA Director John Comerford, maybe some others as well, about some of these specific proposals and the benefits to gun owners, benefits to firearm industry members. But this is obviously the big story of the day. I didn't want to ignore it here on Bearing Arms Cam and Company because it really is important. You know, I've seen some folks say, well, I mean, it doesn't really do much. I beg to differ. I think that some of these rules really do offer substantial changes. Now, you got to keep in mind, the ATF cannot promulgate laws on its own. So I've seen, well, you know, they're not getting rid of machine guns, the ban on machine guns. They can't. They don't have the regulatory power to do that. And by the way, if the ATF did have the regulatory power to put take machine guns off of the NFA, that means that the ATF would have the regulatory power to put items onto the NFA too, right? So it's a double-edged sword. No, the announcement from the DOJ yesterday was not that the ATF is going away, but I got to say, even if the ATF were to disappear tomorrow, some agency is going to be enforcing the federal rules and regulations surrounding firearms, whether it's the ATF, whether it's the DEA, whether it's some, you know, new invention from the Trump administration. You know, I think we need to be realistic in our expectations here. And I think for the most part, folks have been. I've just seen a few comments here and there that I think are a little off base. So we will be talking more about these proposals and what they mean. But I do want to wait until we see the actual language here and not just have to rely on these summaries that were released by the ATF yesterday. All right. So with that in mind, let's talk about what's going on in the Virgin Islands, where Governor Albert Bryan has just signed an executive order, very different from the one that President Trump signed last February, protecting the Second Amendment. Governor Bryan's executive order infringes on our right to keep and bear arms by declaring virtually every government building in the Virgin Islands off limits to lawful carry. Every one of them. If the territory owns a porta potty somewhere in a park, can't carry in that porta potty. Virgin Islands Safe Gun Owners and Kosei Ono have responded to this. As you can imagine, they're not happy. But they've got some proposals for what the governor should be doing instead. And I want to talk about it with Kosei Ono right now. Take a look and a listen. Kosei, thanks very much for coming on the show. It's good to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought about you earlier this week when I saw the story in the Virgin Islands Consortium about Governor Albert Bryan signing this executive order, basically creating a bunch of new gun-free zones in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Every government building, owned or leased, off limits now to those with a concealed carry license. What is your reaction? What's the reaction of Virgin Islands Safe Gun Owners?
Simply, we were obviously we were surprised, and we certainly object to that type of expansive, sensitive area view. It's very similar to the bill that the governor initially proposed, where he said he worked on it for 6 years and then sent it to the legislatures to consider. In that bill, they had something similar in the sense that they were pushing the envelope on sensitive areas, making everything sensitive. And such in a way that you could take anywhere, you could take your gun anywhere you want, so long as it's inside your house. That theme carries over to this executive order. That's the theme and the desire. It's not, I think, the right principle in which they should be operating, since it doesn't create any additional security, safety. You know, it's just a paper ban in the sense that it doesn't stop bad guys from coming in. And using the weapon in an unauthorized way. So,
yeah, and I want to explore that a little bit more because you all did release some suggestions for Governor Bryan. But before getting into that, I want to ask, you know, you talk about how the legislation that has been, you know, kicking around for well over a year now would have offered up a number of new gun-free zones. That's legislation. This is an executive order. Do we even know, does Governor Bryan have the authority to just say, hey, these guns are now, or these places are now off limits to firearms?
That I probably have to reserve to a council's opinion. However, yeah. Based on the, you know, the critical part about what's unique about the U.S. Virgin Islands, the government's portion of the employment, it's a pretty large portion. That's the something that it makes this a unique and even it makes it even more harmful because it's probably relative to other states, the government's employment is probably double and it represents maybe a third of the employment pool, which is pretty large. And because of that, who gets affected? Not only the large number of employee bases, but those who have to, because of the heavy government hand in everything in the U.S. Virgin Islands, you're going to get a permit, you're going to get follow-up meetings, and because of the bureaucratic nature of it, it requires multiple times, multiple visits. So the contractors, the vendors are also equally impacted in addition to law-abiding gun owners who are employees of government.
Yeah. Now, there's also this weird potential exception, right? So under this executive order, individuals who have a license to carry, they can apply to the Virgin Islands Attorney General and the police commissioner and basically ask for a permit that would allow them to carry in a government building or a particular location, right? But this is, as you guys noted, this is like a discretion. This is basically a may issue carry permit for gun-free zones. The Supreme Court has already said may issue permits are unconstitutional, but that sounds like exactly what this would be.
You know, it's I don't know why they keep going the wrong direction is the way we see it. They're approaching it the wrong way in trying to continuously play a little bit of a cat and mouse game, mm-hmm. the way I see it. And again, we have to now either get the Attorney General's permission or the police commissioner, which it's not really defined based on what we could find. It's unclear as to what is the standard. And, you know, what we don't appreciate, I guess, is the double standard where certain elite individuals, you know, government officials can be protected by guns at all time, but the citizens are treated as a second-class citizens, and that we don't have the same option as they do. Now, you know, these are, you know, situations where undoubtedly have unique situations where security details have to occur. However, it certainly feels the way we're being treated in a much different way than the elites in the government. And I think that is an issue we're concerned with.
Absolutely. I mean, and again, we get back to the lack of security in a lot of these government buildings, right? And, you know, the Supreme Court has suggested that you can't simply say, all right, well, this place is crowded and, you know, it's generally protected by police, so therefore it can be sensitive. If the government doesn't treat a particular place as sensitive, right, if there's no additional security measures, no metal detectors, no armed guard station there, then it's sensitive in name only, essentially, right? And so I'm guessing that the vast majority of property that is owned or leased by the Virgin Islands government does not have armed guards posted, do not have metal detectors, do not have secured entrances.
No. So, and that's the practical part of it. So we as VSCO, we're not opposed to having secure buildings. You know, we certainly, there's certain buildings and courtrooms and airports have, you know, security, they have metal detectors. And so that's if you're going to do it, you have to do it the full way. All steps have to be taken into consideration so that you're really effective and not just a, you know, a slogan. You know, I think that's our issue. It's just a slogan now, and it doesn't have the practical impact of actually making anything safe. But it possibly creates more hindrance into, you know, the transition. Those who have to go to work and stay late, and are they, the parking lot is not permitted either, potentially. In which case, how do you transition? If you go to the grocery store on the way home, you have to go to your second job. These are transitions that occur. And then you create unintended consequences of, you know, having to transition. And how do you transition safely? There's all sorts of issues come about. And so obviously one of the disappointment on our part at that we didn't get an invitation to further give our input, you know, on executive order of this nature. Certainly we could have given a much better, you know, suggestions or ideas that might be more effective.
Well, if you guys weren't consulted beforehand, I know that you've released this list of suggestions. Have you been in contact with the governor's office? Have you either reached out or has the governor's office reached out to you after this executive order was released?
I have tried several times to actually to meet with the governor on this issue. I have not received a response yet. We will continue to follow up. And we have certainly, we're planning to do maybe a summer barbecue with the members. So we'll have another meeting with the members this coming summer. That'll be another opportunity for the maybe governor to join us so that he could mingle with us, could hear us firsthand some of these issues rather than just, you know, proceeding without our input. Because we think we have very knowledgeable trainers, very knowledgeable on the law members, that we could come up with good ideas if there's an issue that they're trying to solve. And I don't think this is the way to go about it.
What is the latest with the gun control legislation that has been floating out there for well over a year now?
So that is following the initial introduction of the bill, 360144, we certainly, VSCO members opposed it. It was basically a gun ban and gun confiscation. And then from there, there were some various amendments that were floated, not necessarily officially. And so that part appears to be dormant. We as VSCO members, we came up with basically our version of the constitutional bill that is comprehensive from the beginning to end of Chapter 5, that there's multiple areas that needed the revision that was antiquated and obsolete and unconstitutional. So we dealt with it. We met with maybe two-thirds of the senators in person with members of from our group, meeting one by one, the senators that to walk through the intent and what's in the bill. So that's kind of where we, you know, we presented to the legislatures, they received it. And then, so one of the key things that is happening is there's an election this year, and this is going to be and probably one of the reasons why they're going to be they're maybe hesitant to proceed at this time. Typical, I think, a political strategy at this time. So we think this is an opportune time for all the candidates, existing legislative senators, and then the new senators, as well as the gubernatorial candidates. We'll be very much interested in hearing their opinions and their position on this issue, on the constitutional issue, on this executive order issue, and how to, you know, quickly comply with the U.S. DOJ's lawsuit. There's no need to really kind of fight this. This is pretty obvious stuff. It's been dealt with, Bruin. You know, this we need to become compliant very quickly. This doesn't require to go through this sort of long process, in my opinion. They can simply let's talk. And my understanding, they recently was issued, the judge issued sua sponte for the parties to mediate. So that is, I think, a good sign that they actually come to some kind of resolution faster rather than trying to circumvent the process. So we look forward to being part of that and giving our feedback as to how we've been impacted and then how we might be impacted by the executive order here again. To try to get a waiver or exception from the, now we have to go to the Attorney General. You know, how fast does it take? Because I've also been trying to get to set up a meeting with the Attorney General, yet I have not received a response from that either, so that we could potentially settle my personal lawsuit, as well as potentially offer some suggestions to solve this issue. But we have not heard back from the Attorney General's office. So that's a little bit of a disappointment, and I look forward to hearing from him in the future. So that's kind of where we are.
Okay. Yeah, and it is a disappointment. I hope they're able to get resolution. I did see the judge's order about the mediation, which I think is coming up not too long from now. I think it's maybe a month or so. But we'll be following that as well. And because we'll be reaching out to you. You know, obviously, what's going on there in the Virgin Island territories is very important to gun owners here. You know, on the mainland as well. And you are well aware of that, but I appreciate all of the work that you're doing, all of the efforts of the members of Virgin Island Safe Gun Owners. And if you need a guest speaker for your barbecue, let me know. I travel light.
You know, it's going to be a little bit. We're looking to do it after maybe our main season. You know, the Virgin Islands is a seasonal territory. So usually it comes down in the June just before the hurricane season. So we think it might be a good time to bring the members together. And then, you know, I now that you put that out there, I think it's a good place for somebody to come and visit. And we'll certainly like to follow up with you.
All right. That sounds great. Gosei, thank you so much for your time today, sir. And I look forward to talking to you again very, very soon.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
My thanks to Gosei for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again soon, and very grateful for all of his efforts down there in the U.S. Virgin Islands. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a disturbing case out of Florida. Headline, brother of Wildwood woman in coma after being shot by boyfriend speaks out. It turns out that the boyfriend in question, well known to law enforcement, Robert Morgan is his name, 40 years of age. He allegedly was with his girlfriend on Saturday night. They were arguing, and at one point, Morgan shot his girlfriend, who is now, I guess, in a medically induced coma for the next week or two. And then after she is out of that medically induced coma, they're going to have to do surgery. There are some, you know, very serious concerns here. WESH talked to law enforcement in Sumter and Lake County, Florida. And the Lady Lake Police said that they are, quote, familiar with Morgan. They said since last May, officers have been called out to his home more than a dozen times for a variety of complaints, including animal welfare, noise complaints. Department of Children and Families was also called out to the home twice since May. A report was taken in October, but apparently his four kids were still in the home, which is surprising to me when you consider Morgan's criminal background. So going back to 2008, he was guilty of three counts of battery on a law enforcement officer after punching police officers. Same year, he was found guilty of misdemeanor battery after drunkenly headbutting an employee at a restaurant after hurling slurs at patrons. 2 years later, he was found guilty of felony retail grand theft and criminal mischief. 4 years after that, he was found guilty of battery, second or subsequent offense. 3 years after that, 2017, found guilty, and this is the big one, I think. This is 10 years ago. He's found guilty of felony possession of a firearm because of that felony retail grand theft conviction. Resisting without violence were the charges that he was convicted of. And I don't know if a plea deal was offered in these cases. He was found guilty, but that doesn't mean that these cases went to trial. And I'm guessing that a plea bargain was involved in that case because WESH reports that in that incident 10 years ago, Morgan took his child in a van with other accomplices. They were armed with semi-automatic rifles. They went to a dollar store to try to rob the business. And at one point, Morgan resisted arrest by shoving his child against police officers. Lady Lake police apparently were able to stop the robbery from taking place. So you would have thought that Morgan would have faced a slew of charges, including attempted armed robbery, child endangerment, right? But yet he was found guilty only of felony possession of a firearm and resisting without violence 10 years ago. Since then, he's had, according to the TV station, a, quote, slew of traffic infractions. So we don't know how much time behind bars Morgan actually did for felony possession of a firearm. But again, just given the circumstances there, right? You're trying to commit an armed robbery. You bring your kid along as you're getting ready to commit this armed robbery. You end up using your child as a human shield to try to stop you from being arrested. I would like to think that that would result in at least a 10-year prison sentence, but apparently not. I would also like to think that at that point, you don't have custody of your kid when you took your kid along to an armed robbery and then used them to try to get away from police. But apparently Mr. Morgan still has at least partial custody of his four children there, which is just absolutely amazing to me. And again, just a reminder that these soft sentences, they don't just happen in blue states or blue jurisdictions. This is an issue throughout the criminal justice system where we see these sweetheart plea deals. You know, in many cases, the prosecutors are satisfied because they can say, hey, I got a conviction, right? My conviction rate's still 97, 98%. Not as concerned about what the actual sentence looks like, even though I would say the public very much concerned. A conviction is one thing, but if it results in nothing more than a violent offender getting a slap on the wrist and being sent back out on the streets, I don't think we count that as a win, do we? All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Memphis, Tennessee. And we do have some information, but there's still a lot of details left unreported here. Attempted robbery at Whitehaven Walgreens turns deadly. So this was in the Whitehaven neighborhood of Memphis, Tennessee, not far from Elvis Presley Boulevard and East Raines Road. The robbery happened early Sunday morning at this Walgreens, which is open 24/7, so it was open at the time. According to police, they responded to the location just before 12:30 Sunday morning. Authorities say that officers found a man who was shot, who's pronounced deceased on the scene. Early information from police indicates that the man was trying to rob the store when he was shot and killed. But we don't know who fired the shots. Police have not said that. So was it a customer who intervened? Was it a store employee who intervened? I'm really surprised we actually don't have more information, given that this happened early Sunday morning. But the local media in Memphis has not reported any updates since that initial report. So hopefully we get more details here, because it sounds like this robbery was thwarted by an armed citizen of some kind. We just don't know who and under what circumstances they acted to prevent this robbery. Finally today, our good deed of the day. In the right place at the right time, and able to do the right thing, some employees of a Denny's in Portland, Oregon, who helped save a man who had his throat slashed after he was attacked on the street, which sounds like a very Portland crime, doesn't it? This happened earlier this month. I think it was April 19th. 33-year-old man named Christopher Thomas was walking down the street when a guy named Christopher James Parkins allegedly attacked him. Parkins has been arrested, charged with one count of attempted murder, one count of assault in the first degree, two counts of assault in the second degree, and one count of unlawful use of a weapon. He has pled not guilty. In those cases, he is scheduled for a preventative detention hearing on May the 4th. So Thomas walks into this Denny's. His throat has been slit. A witness said that he saw Thomas, looked over, saw a commotion, saw Thomas stumble back. He said he also saw the suspect tumble and fall as if he'd been pushed. Thomas then made a run for the Denny's restaurant. The witness actually helped him inside. And the employees of that Denny's able to apply pressure to the wound on his neck and to help stop the bleeding there until first responders arrived. According to police, Parkins was located with a fixed blade knife that had been partially concealed by his sleeve. He, after being read his Miranda rights, reportedly told authorities that he'd been up for a few days, that he consumes methamphetamine by smoking it, said that he had been drinking the night before, that he lost his housing days before, that he is now staying on the streets. When an officer said, you know, what happened here? Why did you guys start, you know, tussling? Parkins said, quote, everything feels like it's not even real, like real. Yeah, again, emphasizing he's not sure what's real and what's not. He said he didn't remember fighting with anybody, remember cutting anybody with a knife, but he said he remembers running after he heard police sirens. According to the affidavit, the slash to Thomas's throat was so deep that his trachea was actually exposed. He did undergo surgery, obviously. As of the affidavit, so this is, you know, now, 11 days later, Thomas is still recovering. Hopefully he is out of the hospital and on his road to recovery now. But this could have been a case where Christopher Parkins was charged with actual murder, not attempted murder, had those Denny's employees not intervened to help save Christopher Thomas's life. So in the right place at the right time, and again, willing and able to do the right thing, we thank those anonymous Denny's employees who, I'm going to do a Denny's pun here, hit a grand slam in terms of their Good Samaritan behavior there in Portland, Oregon. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday, where hopefully we will be delving more deeply into the ATF rules that were proposed on Wednesday by Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche and a newly confirmed ATF Director Robert Sakata. I should note as well that I do have a request in to the ATF to have Director Sakata on the program. Hopefully that will happen in the very near future as well. I'm looking forward to having that discussion. But in the meantime, I hope that you have a great rest of your week and a great weekend. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, on Friday, and over the course of the weekend. We'll be keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Still waiting to see what's going on with some of these court cases out there, including the ANJRPC versus whoever the attorney general in New Jersey is now. It used to be Matt Placken, no longer. But we're still waiting to see what that Third Circuit's going to do with the gun and magazine ban in New Jersey. And of course, that is critically important because I think the Supreme Court is waiting to see what the Third Circuit does before it takes action on the five hardware cases that, once again, are slated to be discussed in conference tomorrow. So fingers crossed we get some good news in that regard in the very near future. Have a great rest of your week. As I said, enjoy your weekend as well. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.